What's up, Pipe Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, January 29th, 2024, and this week's episode, UFC 300's Missing Piece. We'll talk about the week in MMA news, a couple, shenanigans at the fight events that were going on, some additions to UFC 300, but we're still missing that main event. And finally, we'll cap it off by talking about this coming Saturday's UFC event, UFC Vegas 85, and the middleweight bout between Roman Dolidze and Nazarudin Imavov. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. A lot of interesting information passing through the interwebs, the MMA interwebs this week. But I really want to know, I'm going to put you on the spot. Sure. Have you watched the Roadhouse trailer?
Watched it. I was part of it. Freaking Jake Gyllenhaal freaking That's looks right. like USADA needs to suspend him for 6 months. Freaking no, I did. It was, you know, it's fine. It's, I mean, I look, much love to Conor McGregor. Rule number one, secure the bag. Yep. Looks like he got another bag. But Leonardo DiCaprio, he's not.
So. Yeah, man, I gotta tell you, I was honestly surprised because he's charismatic. You know, he sounds great on the microphone. He says good things. You know, think about how he was hyping himself up on the mic to get the Floyd Mayweather fight.
Yeah.
So I actually thought he was going to be able to act, like just, you know, get into that Conor McGregor persona and just go. But at least in the trailer, didn't look so hot. You know, how many movies have I been in? Zero. So I don't know what it feels like. But I did expect it to look a little, for him to sound a little better. It was mostly shouting and, like, screaming.
I would imagine it's a lot harder to act as a version of yourself than you'd imagine. So yeah. I'm going to give him that pass. It's,
for sure.
You know, look, he's not there to be the star of the movie or even in a fight. So it's like, all right, man, you know. I'm sure... My understanding is it, while it probably caters to UFC fans, you know, he's not there to be the, you know, a lot of talking. I think he's there to be, you know, less is more, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, the strong silent type. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's probably going to have like 5-10 minutes of camera time, but he's going to make the most out of it in what's probably an hour and a half movie.
Yeah.
Go for
they,
it. You know,
they really put him in there. Like at first I'm thinking,
the
okay,
trailer, he's really prominent.
Yeah, man, he's in it, so good for him. Yeah, all right, so. I want to see it. I mean, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is, I find him to be a good actor. I like movies about MMA. They brought Conor McGregor, and like, I'm going to check it out, for sure.
Hey, Prime Video this March.
Prime Video, I know, they're making us wait for it a little bit, but okay.
I mean, well, think about it, 2 months, I mean, think about some other movies. Oh, like... movie comes out in 8 months. It's like, man, I'm not going to be hyped for this by then. I mean, yep. Let's talk about a few other things that happened.
Sure.
Crazy. One Championship had their pay-per-view event. Look, I was told the fights are actually pretty good, but the real takeaway, Sage Northcutt is there. He's got a fight with Shinya Aoki. And you know what? Just the night of the fight, he... elects to withdraw because his cornermen, it sounds like they were in Japan, but they weren't allowed into the country. So as the prelims are going, they are now flown back to the United States. One Championship does offer Sage some help. They said, hey, we got some jiu-jitsu guys. We know Shinya is a grappler. We could give you some help so the fight goes on. And Sage decides, you know, I don't have my corner. I don't have my people. I'm not going to take the fight. I got to pull out. And then, out of nowhere, not scheduled to do anything besides probably just enjoy the show, UFC veteran and now former ONE Championship bantamweight champion John Lineker steps up on an hour's notice to take the fight with Aoki. And not for nothing, Aoki still did win in the first round by submission, but... quite the turn of events. What did you think of reading all this and hearing all this?
It's wild, man. Of course. I have no idea what it feels like to be in Sage Northcutt's shoes in any facet of life, but specifically this moment where your team can't be there to give you tips, which is what the corner men do, right? They give you tips, they wipe you off, they give you water. I'm not trying to dismiss it. However, the fighter's the one that's going to be in there in the cage, in the ring, doing the work, right?
Yes.
And so thinking about it from that perspective, which is how I would feel if I were Sage, I would say, I trained well. I'm here. It's a pay-per-view card for my promotion. I sign on the dotted line. I need to fulfill my obligations. My opponent did everything he needed to do to get here. You know, nobody missed weight. Everything's on board, above board. And not only is it a pay-per-view for my promotion, I sign on the dotted line. This is a legend. I'm going to fight because I said I would. They didn't sign my cornerman to fight in there with Aoki. They signed me, and I'm here and I'm ready to go. That's what I would have wanted him to do. That's how I feel I would have responded. I read a lot of comments supporting his decision to pull out, saying, you know, the cornerman, like, that's your team. You know, that's all. It's all one component, basically. If they're not there, then it's not, you're not ready for the fight, stuff like that. Again, having no fight experience, I disagree. I think you said you would fight. Everyone's there to see you fight. You go fight. So didn't like that response to not having his corner there. It is super strange that, and I think of U.S.-Japan relations, they seem pretty normal and friendly. And so it's strange to me that there was a visa issue and that it was so down to the wire also. So bottom line, though, is I didn't like it. What did you think? Would you have done the same? Would you have gone in there and fought without a corner or without your corner?
I mean, here's one thing I will say is different about Sage than anybody else. Sage has had some really awful luck, right? Essentially... I don't know, maybe Tapology hasn't been updated, but you know the guy who essentially, like, sent him to the Shadow Realm?
Yeah.
And that led to his long layoff? That guy, had one more kickboxing fight after that. So essentially the guy did that to Sage and then dipped from MMA. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, it's like, at least Sage, you know, if that guy went on to do stuff, Sage could be like, well, look what he did to other people.
Yeah.
The guy has a very extensive kickboxing career, you know, Alexandre, oh my god, I'm blanking on his name. I just read it too, sorry. But what's his name? Cosmo Alexandre.
That's right.
Yeah, very cool name, almost like Pantoja. Anyway, but the fact is, it's like, so Sage gets pretty much half of his facial bones obliterated.
Yeah.
Goes on, like, what was it, 2, almost 3 year layoff? Gets the win. Gets to this super fight that's been rebooked. Now you're here, and it's like, I get it. Like, no offense, but this guy probably isn't in the mood after everything that's happened to him to, you know, be gangster and, you know what, have gloves, we'll travel, let's ride. It's like, no, you know, like, I've had it go wrong and not touched competition for years because of it.
Right.
So I can understand a guy like Sage saying, I don't have anything to prove to anyone. I want my corner. We prepped for it. We knew, you know, these are, you know, I don't just trust some strangers to follow me. You know, like, I think that it's not the most unfair thing to say, I want my cornerman there. Singapore, Japan, America. The fact is, this is my team and I want to put myself in the best position to win. I can respect that because Sage has had, you know, he knows better than a lot of fighters what it's like to deal with this kind of long layoff. I mean, I feel like I can count on one hand the amount of fighters who they take a knockout loss and then they just happen to incur injuries that take them out multiple years like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shoot, like, look at, you know, Volkanovski. Got stopped in November. He's fighting in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and Sage knocked out 3 years. I completely get his reasoning. I more applaud the gangsterness of John Lineker. I think that guy just, I mean, some dudes just love a good fist fight, and that's why his fan favorites, we love him. So I'm going to give him that credit. But yeah, I'm going to say, you know what, Sage? If I were in your shoes, I wouldn't feel like rolling the dice that often either.
Yeah.
I don't think that's unfair.
That's a fair point, man. Yeah. I hear you.
How about this one? I don't know if you saw clips, but if you didn't, I highly encourage you to. It was like Project X meets MMA. Karate Combat has this event. Essentially, it was more or less like a developer challenger series, contender series type of event. It's at the new president, Asim Zaidi, President Awesome's house. And just, how do I make this clear? The dude's got money.
Okay.
So it's not just like, oh, he's got a pretty decent sized two-story. No, it's like a complex mini compound of property that they assemble the full-size pit in. And it's like you have fans and it's like a party, but they're having fights and they have commentators. And it's just very raw. It's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like Jersey Shore meets fights. It was really crazy. And so crazy that several cop cars come in. It looked like they were either trying to shut it down or something, but it was very clear that there was so much commotion going on that, you know, extra help seemed to be called in for assistance. What are your thoughts on hearing this, seeing this unfold?
Not surprised, because I've only been to one Karate Combat event, but even if you hadn't and you just watched it, like, it always, and I love the promotion, like the style of fighting they do. I think it's really cool, very entertaining, but it's always to me looked like you're watching, or that time that I was there, like in an underground basement, you know, like Fight Club style, and like you're just waiting for the police to come in and raid it. That's just the vibes it has, and it's curated. I mean, they do it that way. It almost feels like you're in the game Street Fighter, right? There's just like
yes,
a few people around the combat zone, and they're like, yeah, and it's dark, you know, it's like a club, it's lit like a club, and it's just got this like underground
very Fight Club. Yeah
So I get it. I'm not surprised that happened, especially if you're doing that same setup in a house, but that's cool, man. That's like, this is good news. Like, you know, they say
no publicity is bad publicity.
Yeah, and so like, yeah, you got some press because your cool underground fight club got a little bit of attention from the police. All right, you know, I would milk it a little bit. I ain't mad at it.
You know, so I've been to two this year, and I could tell you right now they were very different. I think that, look, Karate Combat, as I understand it, they are trying to go in a different direction to really make an impact. You know, I think these events, while they're very nice and a lot of people are invited, I think the thing is, like, you talk about it with PFL and all that, like, at a certain point, things got to convert to dollars, right?
Yep.
It's got to convert to merch and tickets and et cetera, views and, you know, ad sales going up. So I think the thing that I would acknowledge, first of all, is that, like, Karate Combat, the old one, even though they have ownership that is very into like the next gen cryptocurrency space and all that, the new ownership is almost trying to create an impact through, I think, social media engagement. I know their team, Goatshed, I mean, the president, he's a coach. If you remember Aileen Perez, the fighter that likes to twerk and all that, like, she got, all right, if you don't remember, if you didn't see it, she got her victory. She got on, you know, she did like handstand against the cage, started twerking. This is a big dude, by the way. He's got to be about 6 foot, if I'm not mistaken. And look, you know, gets on the cage and twerks with her. And it's like a whole moment and all that.
Yeah.
And look, mind you, look, go live your best life, whatever you want to do. But, you know, they understand this. They understand the marketing, branding, presentation of it. And look, I've been to the underground Fight Club Karate Combat. I've also been to Nightclub Karate Combat. And so when I see these clips of freaking full Project X in effect, I'm like, you know, it's so different and wild. And look, I don't know that it translated into views. But when I saw it, I was very much like, I had exactly the kind of thought you want to have. What is this? What am I watching? In a good way. Like, I want to, like, no, like, I want to know what's going on. I am interested. Obviously, I figured it out quickly because I'm not new to Karate Combat and what they're trying to accomplish. But if I were just coming across it on YouTube, I would definitely be like, yo, like, what's this going on? It looks cool.
Yeah, so, for sure, dude.
Yeah, so it's a lot. I'll say that. But, what comes next? I'm not sure. Looking forward to it. I know they're going to Mexico City the same night as pretty much everything. But it's pretty awesome. Yeah. We had some news. Are you ready to actually talk about the real stuff?
I am.
So look, no secret by now, if you're part of the MMA Twitter sphere, what's the Instagram version of the Twitter sphere? What do we call it? There's an MMA Twitter, but there's no such thing as MMA IG, you know?
Yeah.
If you just saw it on Instagram, let's say that for now. I don't think there's a name, but there should be.
Yep.
Kayla Harrison.
The Gramosphere.
The Gramosphere. Hey, that's not that bad. I like it.
Ooh.
If you were there on the Gramosphere, you saw it. Kayla Harrison signs with the UFC. She's fighting Holly Holm at UFC 300. Look, so cliff notes of everything. Obviously, Don Davis had said that, you know, Kayla Harrison might have one more fight on the contract. Per the grapevine, the thinking is that Kayla Harrison thought her contract was done. And in the end, what happens is that Kayla Harrison was granted her release from any other obligations with PFL. She is with the UFC. She is now part of a huge event. And this is one for UFC. This is a huge get. Two, for PFL, there's something to think about. And then, not for nothing, Natalie Kayla Harrison will be fighting at bantamweight. Per Ariel Helwani, the UFC was not interested in featherweight. It was either bantamweight or no UFC contract. I want to start with that. What do you think about the Kayla Harrison impact and everything else in the UFC now?
Well, the impact will be, I think, more for her, right? Because it's an opportunity to build her brand in a way that we actually didn't think was going to be possible with her weight, restriction, what we thought was a restriction all this time, right? She herself has said it was, she could never make 135. So when PFL acquired Bellator, it felt like all our dreams had come true. We were finally going to get Kayla, Cyborg, the 145 or 55 division or whatever the heck it was going to be. I don't even know. It was like more bigger sized women and they were all going to be in the same promotion and this was going to be great. And this kind of, to me, was like, wow, a gut punch. Not necessarily in a bad way, but probably for PFL and all the competitors, the female competitors there, a little bit of a gut punch. But a ballsy move by Kayla Harrison. This is definitely, an F word. I don't want to say it, but like, you know, F it. You know, when you're just going to say, all right, screw it. I'm going to do it no matter what. This is a Kayla Harrison move saying, screw it. I'm going all in. This is my last chance. I'm going to make 135. I'm going to build my brand. You know, look at Michael Chandler, right?
Yeah.
He's done great things by just being in the UFC, not even winning most of his fights, but good on the mic. Good enough in the cage, charismatic and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Let me just say this. Kayla Harrison, when she was signed by PFL, it was the perfect place for her, not only size-wise, but with the promotion that wanted to build itself up and had a really intelligent and charismatic person to help do that, right? She would go on interviews on ESPN. She's so smart. She's charming. She's funny. You can't catch her off guard. She's very poised, composed, all these great things. She's an incredible spokesperson, has been for PFL. Now she's going to go to UFC. Everyone's going to be asking her about the weight cut, but I'm going to put that aside for a moment. Just think about how good she'll be on the mic for the UFC. Leading up to the fight, she's a two-time Olympic gold medalist in judo. We all know that, but there's like a person there that the UFC can help build up as a role model, an example for young women. Like, I think from many different marketing perspectives, this is a big deal for the UFC, for female MMA, and for Kayla Harrison's brand. So triple win on that in that regard. I do feel for PFL, man, because she helped build their brand. She was, I think, still going to be a big component in the future of PFL. It seems like somebody dropped the ball with the contract, didn't read it carefully, didn't draft it, you know, to protect PFL enough. And so this is what's happened. We didn't think there was a rose from the UFC in the basket, but there was. And they gave it to Kayla Harrison. She accepted, and that's all she wrote.
Oh, I love that reference. Oh, I can't think of where you got it.
The man, double G, baby.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that was such a great one to revisit that last week, I'll tell you. So a lot, I want to address a lot because you brought up a lot of great things. First of all, yeah, Kayla and UFC, one of the things that that you brought up and just the way she really, I'll say this, really blossomed, not just as a fighter, but as a personality in her, what is this, maybe 4 or 5 years of PFL? I mean, she, no exaggeration, I would say is one of the top three girls on the microphone, if not maybe the number one right now.
For sure.
And let me make it clear, like a Valentina is a huge star and very popular. Zhang Weili, big star, huge, you know, just very popular, very skilled. I'm not saying that, you know, there's a better, worse way to build a superstar. But if you ask me, hey, like a Kayla Harrison press conference with some beef. Oh my gosh, this is a girl that, like, I'll say this. I like watching Valentina fight. I don't know that I am ever blown away by what she's going to say on the microphone, which is her personality, which is fine. And I say this all the time.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, I would be, okay, that's not fair. Valentina speaks like all the languages.
No, but it's not the same. You don't have that flow in English that fair. She would have in Russian, I think, Kyrgyzstanish. Anyway.
Yeah. I apologize to the people there. I don't know how you refer to it, but if, you know, leave us a comment, enlighten us. We really appreciate it. But the fact is, look, and I've said this, I would probably be very boring as a fighter on the microphone. I wouldn't want to be, but I would end up that way. Let's say it like it is.
Yeah.
Kayla, I would say, just has figured that out. She's cracked the code to what works. And she's said it, just don't worry about being Miss Congeniality. And it's worked. And seeing that brand brought to the UFC, I think is huge. You talk about her history. Yes, absolutely is the kind of ambassador that I think any fight company, PFL, Bellator, ONE, could get behind. But she's in the biggest organization. That is huge. When I think about what her future could be, there's no doubt there's some big fights that could happen in UFC. And if it's like a Michael Chandler, not here for a long time, but a good time, I can see her in the, she's at the perfect age and all that to still make that kind of impact, particularly in this iteration for the larger women in the UFC, the bantamweights. I'm going to address featherweight in a minute, but for sure, if we're just talking about what's on paper, bantamweight, Raquel, Juliana Pena, the possibility of getting Amanda Nunes back in the cage. All of those things are very relevant to Kayla Harrison as of signing. Especially she beats Holly Holm. The floodgates are wide open for everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to talk about the bantamweight of it all before we talk about the PFL of it all. I've seen Kayla Harrison. I've seen bantamweights. That is a taller, broad-shouldered athlete.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that right now. Can she do it? Should she do it? She says she can. She knows her body better than anyone. Here's what I will say about this whole thing with the bantamweight. And I've brought it up many times. It's been a minute, but I'll say it again. Ever since the UFC signed Felicia Spencer and Megan Anderson about roughly the same day or something like that.
Yeah.
They have spent, let me make this clear, $0 on the women's featherweight division. Even Amanda Nunes, you can argue, is a more natural bantamweight than featherweight.
Oh, yeah.
All of the women that have been brought up, moved up, are all bantamweights blown up to featherweight.
Yeah.
That didn't cut weight. The UFC has spent $0 building that weight class. And look, that's their prerogative. But now let's talk about this. If Kayla Harrison's going to fight bantamweight 4 or 5 times, I just don't know that I believe that'll happen. I think that the UFC ideally would like her to be able to make bantamweight, but the fact is, I don't know that that's, you know, I hear Aspen Ladd talk about the health issues she had making it.
Yeah.
Kayla is bigger than Aspen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I see this long term. And, you know, here's what I think are the two scenarios that UFC, here's what UFC would like, here's what I think Kayla would like. UFC would like Kayla to be able to compete with the bantamweights that they already have, like I just named, Raquel, Juliana. Hopefully, the hope would be that you could entice Amanda back.
Yeah.
Ultimately. And you just roll it for 4 or 5 fights and just, you know, new life in the bantamweight division and in the upper weight classes for the women. Secondly, that's what UFC would want. I think Kayla should really just go balls to the wall as much as you can. Get out there, get on the mic, promote it, do this. Take the fight with Holly. And the hope is that you can bring the UFC, more importantly, the fan demand over to see and to try to rebuild featherweight a little bit. Because I think that while Amanda was better at bantamweight and you could run both, Kayla is the kind of star, even if it's only for a little bit, you can maybe bring featherweight back into the picture again. Norma Dumont, other fights like that. Maybe try to get Juliana Pena moving up, things like that. I think that's something that's very relevant and very possible. But I will say this, right now, do I see Kayla Harrison having this long, illustrious bantamweight career? No, I don't think that's good for her health. I'll say that right now. I don't want to see that for her. She's a natural featherweight, plain and simple.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, muscular, you know, she's been building muscles in her body to compete at a higher weight class for almost her whole life. And even skeletally, structurally, it seems like she's just broader, wider than most of the athletes at 135. I think, though, I mean, if... I don't think the UFC wants to open that division again because I don't think they want 145. I don't think they want it to be like a open close kind of division where only when there's a big enough star, we open it. When that star leaves, we close it 2 years on, 2 years off. But of course they can ask their fighters, you know, does anyone really want to move up to 145 permanently? In the early featherweight days, you know, Holly Holm, always game. I mean, is Holly Holm, first of all, the most game fighter in bantamweight? Like, she still has a name, and they put her everywhere they need her to help, you know, strengthen a card or a matchup, right? Cyborg, Nunes, now Kayla Harrison, like, she's always up for it. So, side kudos to her, but I don't know, man. I really don't think they're going to reopen that division. I think Kayla Harrison can fight for maybe 2 years, twice a year at 135, and then that's it. She'll walk off into the sunset. I just really don't see them reopening it. I don't.
I think what it comes down to is, and I hate to say this, but we talked about it. How much demand has there been for the female bantamweights and featherweights over the last 2 years? Like outside of Amanda Nunes. It's been zero. I don't know that the fans, for a lot of different reasons, are hyped up about it. For example, they threw Raquel and Mayra Bueno Silva on the card last week, 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it made the difference to people on pay-per-view to have that title fight. It was the Sean and Drake show, and that was it, right?
Right.
There's just not that demand for it, and I think the UFC sees that as a business. If the fans aren't spending their money, if there's not movement and traction in the women's upper weight classes, why are we going to sign people to some you know, 30 and 30, 50 and 50 contracts to fight at featherweight. I get it. That being said, I do think there is some, you know, a star like Kayla Harrison, it's essentially like you signed her to not be, essentially you signed her, but you put her in a position to not be everything she was able to be before. Like, you want Kayla Harrison because Kayla Harrison is the girl who was running running PFL and who was a star over there and all that. Now it's like you put her in a very tough position to perform like that person.
Yeah.
She could talk on the mic, but even then, I mean, that's a worse weight cut. Every fighter will tell you the weight cut is the last time you feel like talking in front of everybody.
Right.
That to me is a, you know, my puzzler is puzzling over it. I want to see Kayla do well, but it's like, I've seen that girl. You've seen that girl. That is a tough cut. The same way, look, I love Terrence Crawford. I'm not going to sit up here and be like, well, he just needs to eat a million chickens and he could fight Tyson Fury. It doesn't work that way.
No.
It just doesn't. You know?
A million.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. The body, I mean, like, there's only so much you can
pack on.
Yeah.
And even then, compete with a naturally bigger, smaller athlete, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I just, I don't know. You know what I mean?
I do. So, I mean, yeah, it's right to be concerned, but we also have, I also think, like, man, she's so smart, and she's not gonna, you know, meaning, you know, she's smart to, enough to know, like, what the risks are of attempting this run at the bantamweight division. I could also see her thinking like, yep, it's gonna hurt, it could cause some some damage, but the glory might be worth it. I don't know. It's, look, the first fight will tell us a lot. How she looks, how she feels, how she performs, and we'll know more then. But I am still excited that she's in the UFC. And I am still shocked that she is going to be doing it at 135.
I agree. I agree. It's great to see her in UFC. I am still put a pin in it on 35.
Yeah.
I'll say that respectfully. Let's talk about the PFL of it all. I think the biggest thing about this is that if she had one more fight, then here's the issue. Let's say you beat Cyborg. Now you've devalued the Cyborg fight for Larissa and Leah. And you just, essentially, you rob the bank. You take the money and you run.
Mm-hmm.
If you re-sign, Larissa and Leah are not really, you know, outside of Cyborg, you know, they're not going to really propel you any more than anything else you've done, in my opinion.
Right.
Larissa is great right now. And that trilogy is there, or quadrilogy. But really, where are you going from here with this? And I think that that's something to be said. I think, and she would probably be too diplomatic to say it, but you know that Kayla was very, very unhappy with the fact that PFL put her on ice in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that she only fought once in 22.
Yep.
And I want to, you know, call it down the middle. The game changed from January 2023 to December 2023. You probably were still planning to do a pay-per-view in June if you were PFL in January.
Mm-hmm.
Then you signed Jake Paul. Then you signed Francis.
Right.
As the year goes on, the Bellator thing becomes a thing. All of these things are very relevant. And so, yeah, you know, I'm not saying that they were out there plotting on Kayla Harrison. But there's something to be said. The rules of the game changed over the course of the calendar year. Going forward, I can understand why Kayla looked at the Cyborg fight, looked at the options, and she just said, you know, at the end of the day, this is what PFL did. I told them I didn't want to do this. And I can understand where that UFC carrot was just too tempting not to go grab, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that that's all very relevant. Is this a great time for PFL? Absolutely. Is it still a great time? Absolutely. I do think, though, when you talk about the biggest fight in women's MMA that could have been made, yeah, it might have just disappeared. And that's that really sucks. But I think that that's essentially what they came down to. I'm sure that PFL could have argued, and I'm sure they probably negotiated with Kayla and said, hey, we got one more fight, this and that. If there was any, you know, gray area on does she have one more fight, does she not, I'm sure that what was the deal breaker is that Kayla probably let them know, even if I honor one more fight, my plan is still to leave for UFC. And so if you know that about your fighter, I can understand why PFL would be like, well, let's make the Cyborg Larissa Cyborg McCourt fight as big as we can. And if that's how you feel, all right, then we're just going to dissolve that last one.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like it could have been how it all went down.
I'm trying to think as, like, if I were running it, what are the kind of things that would influence my decision-making? This is all speculatory. She could tell me something else on the MMA hour sometime, and we'll go from there. But
yeah,
that's just what I'm thinking, right? My puzzler is puzzling.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, they definitely pissed her off. Like, over the years, there were these moments where she, of course, pandemic, and she's looking at the UFC pulling out all the stops to keep their fighters fighting, and the PFL, for whatever reason, financial or otherwise, wouldn't do the same thing. And then the contract disputes, you know, that time, which now, thanks to Helwani anyway, at least that's how I found out, that time when it looked like she had signed with a different promotion and then PFL matched, turns out it was to fight Cyborg in Hawaii, which would have been amazing. And PFL matched and basically dragged her back in and said, not so fast. So there's gratitude for how they helped her build her MMA career. But also it seems like a little bit resentment, or at least a little bit of like, I'm ready to move on. You know, I had my first, I got my my experience, and now I want to go to the big show. So I think she found an opening, and it's not the ideal one as far as the weight class goes, but it's an opportunity of a lifetime, so...
I could just see her, like I said, the bantamweight thing is the only bad thing about this whole deal. I think that Kayla has all the capabilities to have a Michael Chandler type run in UFC, arguably better because of who she is and her skill set for the women's divisions. But yeah, man, it's just really tough. It's just really tough for me to see it right now. In terms of PFL, obviously... Now you pivot. I would still say that the PFL is very much all in now on Larissa and Cyborg. And I think that Peter Murray suggested as such. He acknowledged that the Liam McCourt fight is there. You know, it's unfortunate, but Cyborg just isn't into the Pacheco fight. I think that PFL kind of like, how do I put this? Pretty much, they want to build up their... They want to show how good their PFL roster always was. Yeah. And I know we talked about it last week. They're all his guys now, right? That being said, I think that Larissa beating Cyborg, that really helps the cause in terms of, oh, well, the PFL women were always legit. Like, the PFL fighters were always legit. I think that that just is right there for PFL. I think that's just what they want. Cyborg, I don't know if it's out of sportsmanship or just, you know, seeing the impact in Ireland. She's just like, well, McCourt in Ireland is bigger than Pacheco anywhere. And Cyborg even is doing this whole thing. She's acting like the fight's already done. I bet you it's not.
Yeah, sure.
So here we are. Let me ask you just... Natalie's crystal ball, where do we go from here with the Cyborg and PFL?
Oh boy. I think they'll give her opinion a solid and, you know, feel it out. So she's thinking Liam McCourt is a bigger fight because, you know, if they put it in the right place, there will be more eyeballs because of Leah's fan base and Cyborg's fan base versus Pacheco's fan base, which, I mean, it cannot be so big. Let's just be real. So I think it lines up, meaning that she's probably right. And we do see the Leah McCourt fight, but Pacheco's your champ, so you can't just leave her hanging either. You know, Brazil versus Brazil, the lady who beat Kayla versus Cyborg. You know, there's lots of things you can do marketing-wise. I don't know, man, because, like I said, I agree, Leah McCourt's probably the bigger fight, at least attendance-wise, you know, in the arena. But Pacheco's the champ, and so I think you got to do something with her.
I mean, I said it from Jump Street. I know Leah McCourt has been saying that she's been kind of railroaded by PFL. I get it. You shoot your shot. You never know what could happen. Look at Francis. Look at Stipe Miocic. I mean, DC. Oh, the Jon Jones trilogy. Yeah. Oh, Brock Lesnar. Somehow we come back around again and things happen, right? It's not unheard of. Don Davis and everyone's been polite, but I think they essentially they were trying to be polite and tell her, Leah, you're not getting Cyborg. Sorry. And look, that sucks. And I've said that a few times now over the course of the weeks in the show. But I just think that's what essentially happened. My ultimate prediction, I don't want them to wait until November, December for a pay-per-view. I think they're going to go ahead and they're going to do Cyborg against Pacheco, and they're going to put it on some card over here on the, what's it called? On the Bellator series. They're not going to make it a part of the PFL stuff. Okay. I expect they'll fight sometime May, sometime in between everything, but May is probably what I'm predicting. Assuming they do this event, they start regular season in April, and then they fit Bellator in there somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that, and then if I'm McCourt, if you had asked me last week, I would have, and I think I said it, do Cyborg Harrison, Pacheco McCourt. Now, McCourt should fight someone like last year's finalist Marina Muknatkina, or someone like Amber Liebrock, another popular one. Somebody, just make sure you're on that card and lay down the gauntlet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I do think she's still a big fight, especially not, you know, past Cyborg for Pacheco and all that. She's on a great run right now. I just don't think she's the next fight anymore. She just needs to remind people why she can't be forgotten in the shuffle. So that would be my suggestion for how you make all these pieces work. But for sure, I think we're going to get Cyborg Pacheco, and I think we're not going to get it on a pay-per-view. We're going to get it on a Bellator event sometime this spring.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll go from there.
Nice.
Some other notes. The women's featherweight division will not have a tournament. Pacheco and the other will still have fights. Essentially, they're going to be showcase fights, so there's no $1 million prize, but I think the women are going to get their opportunities. The women's flyweights will have a division, so PFL developed a few girls on Challenger Series. Bellator obviously had women's flyweights. What are your thoughts on the flyweights getting the tournament, the featherweights not?
I'm not surprised. You know, this has been an issue as far as numbers for the bigger weight classes in women's MMA forever. You know, Kayla, Cyborg, like it's all part of that same storyline. So I get it. You have just way more options at flyweight. It's also a more exciting, you usually get more exciting fights, you know, smaller, faster, able to develop a broader skill set because of that size and speed. So all around more entertaining. I completely understand and I'm on board.
Yeah, I mean, look, once again, things get better for one, worse for another.
Yeah.
One thing I would say is that I think that there's still going to be a lot of room for the women to work. But I get it. You want a chance to change your life with $1 million. That's now off the table. And that's not the best feeling. So.
Well, yeah, that sucks too.
Yeah. But for the women's flyweights, I think this is huge. Essentially, you get what we always thought we'd get, which is a women's flyweight Grand Prix. About the only thing I would say is that it is weird in that, you know, it comes at an interesting time. Where do you go with Liz Carmouche and Ilima. And, you know, it's just a weird time in the women's flyweight division because Liz is talking about she wants to do bantamweight. What would you do with flyweight? I think that the women's flyweight division was on the cusp of a turnover. You got Liz at the top, who's, you know, the most veteran out of all of them in Bellator. And then really the rest of the division is like these younger girls like Diana Sarogova and some of these other contenders. It makes for a very interesting time at flyweight. So I'm interested to see how they shake it all out, who's tournament, who's not in tournament, and how they build it. And then outside of that, Don Davis and Peter Murray just kind of reiterated this, that there's several Bellator events during the year. There's PFL, the tournament, and then they're still going to do PFL Europe. So that makes for quite the that makes for quite the schedule. What are your thoughts on just, I guess, the volume of events they're going to have this year?
Well, I suspect they're feeling it all out, and they have to, you know, honor. I'm sure there were some deals crafted in this merger acquisition. We have to make sure that the fighters have however many fights, opportunities, and you don't want to look at like Bellator's the, you know, the ugly stepchild. So you want to respect the promotion or the brand and create these, continue to, you know, create opportunities for fighting. It's going to get a little crowded, a little confusing. Things will get lost in the shuffle. Events will get lost in the shuffle. And, you know, they're going to figure out, I'm sure by next year, it's not going to be so kumbaya with everybody's coming over and everybody's welcome. There's going to be some streamlining done for sure. But this year is just kind of like, let's create platforms for everybody, and probably thinking in the background, let's see who pops. Let's see who really performs, which particular, like specific fighters, specific divisions, what rivalries, what, you know. So they're testing everything out. They're filling everything out right now. But like I said, it's going to get a little confusing, a little overwhelming. There's going to be stuff that we're probably going to miss or have little interest in, but you got to keep the MMA gears churning over there. They have a lot of fighters now.
I think you have to understand it as the game is now going to be different for PFL. Now, what do I mean by that? Last year, even like, all right, you had Cedric Doumbé in the European card, right? That's cool. Yeah. Now, and then it's PFL regular season with all the stars. You know, Kayla ended up on the pay-per-view, but we didn't see Jake or Francis. This year, you got to acknowledge the fact that a lot of the, quote, homegrown PFL stars probably won't be in seeing us often. So like Clay Collard, guys like that, Nathan Schultz, Hannon Ferreira, Denis Koltsov, maybe they get the tournament. But now it's like, all right, so let's look at, let's say Ferreira, who's been popular for a while, right? Fighting Ryan, yeah. Bader. Mm-hmm. Let's say him and Bader just get into a banger. You're telling me he's going to turn it around in 2 months for his first regular season fight? In April?
Yeah.
Same thing with, all right, let's say Bader was in a tournament. Vadim Nemkov, Yoel Romero. What do we do with all that? So I think you have to acknowledge that the PFL regular season could very well lose some steam with star power. Now, like everything else, people didn't know who Pineda was this time last year. Now he's fighting Pitbull in a big fight. There is always the chance that you grow new stars in the season. That being said, going into this, you know, that chance to see the Brendan Loughnanes and all that, things are now different because people have the option of, oh, you could get a big fight with the Bellator guys, or you get a big fight on the pay-per-view,
yeah,
things like that. So I think that's something to acknowledge with the volume of events. The second thing is obviously, like, where do you go with some of the odd people out? I talked about Liz Carmouche. Mm-hmm. Patchy Mix is the biggest question mark, right? You know, some of the PFL stars, you know, you got Clay Collard, you got, you know, Impa. Like, are these guys not going to go for another million? What do we do here? all of these things are very relevant questions, but the only way I see this shaken out is that the regular season tournament loses star power, but in total, PFL does still turns out well because now you are stacking the Bellator series events and the pay-per-views. So I think that's how this all plays out for the PFL in 2024.
All right.
And I think, I'll say this, I think we're still going to see some of the PFL stars fight the Bellator stars not on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I think those Bellator events are not strictly Bellator versus Bellator roster.
They plain can't and be. Simple. Yeah.
So we'll go from there. I mean, that's pretty much it. Obviously, that was a lot to unpack. Now we have a couple more UFC 300 announcements, which, you know, how can we ever get enough of them, right?
Yeah.
One of them we didn't talk about, Jim Miller, Bobby Green, no Paul Felder, no Matt Brown, but I really like the fight, so I'm happy for Jim. Sadiq Youssef against Diego Lopez, great fight. Diego coming off a big victory. Obviously, Sadiq is looking to bounce back from the Edson Barbosa fight, but still an up-and-comer. It's great. And then recently announced, Jessica Andrade taking on Marina Rodriguez. Natalie, anything you'd like to say about the fights?
Good matchups, especially, well, all three are good. I'm Andrade, Marina, that's going to be a banger. Jim Miller, Bobby Green, that's tough. It's a good fight. Let's just say Jim Miller wanted to retire at UFC 300. Probably would have been easier to do it with a win against Paul Felder than Bobby Green, but this is going to be a good fight nonetheless.
I mean, look, Jim Miller, it's like Father Time just keeps forgetting to knock on the door, man.
Yeah.
He's done when he'll say he's done, you know?
Yeah. I'm not trying to push him out the door. It's just that would be a good place to do it if you were thinking about it.
I get it. That's not unfair. Look, Jessica and Marina, action. Diego Sadiq, action. So it's like, once again, two more bangers. Jim Miller gets his 300 fight. I just like him.
Yeah.
We have, as of today, right now when you and I are talking, 11 fights announced for UFC 300. Typically, the pay-per-view events have 15. We have four more fights still waiting on a main event. Natalie, are we done with this whole 300 is not as good as 299?
No, it's still not as good.
Are you sure? Really?
Wait, we're still waiting for more fights?
You got Gaethje, Weili, yeah. Gaethje Max, Weili Yan, Charles and Sarukian. That's a big three.
Yeah, that is a big three.
Jiří Rokic. Jiří Rokic is as good as any of the undercard fights on 299.
Okay. Well, you put it that way.
Aljamain featherweight debut. He was not just a champion, pay-per-view main event, his last fight.
Is he...
But you're telling me Peter Yan and Song is bigger?
Yeah, no, it's not. I forgot about Aljo. Okay, all right, thank
How
you.
How do you forget about Aljo? No, just kidding.
You know what?
I'm trolling you.
All right. But are we still not waiting for the big one?
Here's my thing about that. Like, that's where I'm trying to be very objective, and I'm like, okay, if I look at that card and I look at 299, if we get, let's just say, Leon and Bilal, will I look at 299 and 300 and be like, yeah, 299 is the banger? Or is it, no, look at that 15, look at this 15, is that just as good? And I'm like, you know what? It's just as good. I think they said already 299 has a record for most champ or former champs on the card.
Okay.
So I feel like that's a very relevant discussion point.
Yeah.
You know, I described this, if you didn't see it, on the Brilliant Resilient Experience with Bree Eckert. I think that Dana... And the UFC, and maybe this is just because they don't have it yet, the plan was you build up hype as you announce more fights.
Right.
I think instead people wanted you get the main event, and then as your eyes widen, the feast just looks bigger when you see the undercard.
Yeah, you start adding the side dishes. But you got to put the ribs on the plate first.
I think that's what's happening. The fans are just like, wait, we're just like, no one's happy with everything because they just want to know that the turkey's so good, you know?
All right, yep.
That's
what's happening.
I mean, so we're 1 week forward. I've seen Dracus do a lot of celebrating. I don't know that he's actually gone to the doctor to tell us how his eye is.
Yeah. As long as he keeps ice on it.
Yeah. Well, remember, if a hairline fracture, ice ain't gonna do nothing. It's just time. No. But man. We've narrowed it down to three. It's either Leon Bilal, Dracus Adesanya, or they move Conor McGregor. Is that fair?
Yeah.
We're in accordance. The 300 main event will be one of those three fights.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, I'm trying to think. I just don't see Islam coming off Ramadan to fight Leon. I just don't. And I think with all this booking of Gaethje and Charles and them, I don't know that they're going to pivot off of that. You know what I mean? They could. If Leon, let's put it this way. If Islam were to surprise everybody, fight Leon at 300, I could almost see them just saying, all right, Gaethje Charles 2 for the undisputed if they win, or okay. Gaethje Saruk, you know. Gaethje Sarukian, whatever combo of the people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. But I'll just stand by that one. I think that 300 will be one of those three fights.
Okay. I mean, I agree with you. Those are really our only options.
Here's what I want to point out. Out of those three, two of them involve a superstar.
Yeah.
So it's like UFC just kind of has to line these up in a way that puts it over. Conor added, Dracus Izzy added, that beats 299 easy.
For sure.
And, you know, I would argue, yeah, most stacked event, you know, we've seen in a long time, you know. Every fight just feels relevant. It's just good, you know. So. Oh, my God, I can't wait. I just need it to happen. Let's talk about this coming Saturday's UFC event, UFC Vegas 85 from the Apex, Roman Dolidze, Nazardeen Imavov. I think the biggest thing about this one is that this time in the middleweight division, this is a huge fight for the winner to really make that, kind of get into that conversation, you know, kind of like Sean Strickland had his breakthrough. I think Nazardeen and the guys really just need to have that moment where they really break through. Nazardeen, I mean, he had the no contest because of the headbutt. He had a lot of cancellations in 2023.
Yeah.
Roman, he reeled off those four good ones. He stops Jack Hermanson, but then he had just that really disheartening loss against Marvin Vettori. So not, you know, a chance to bounce back for both of these guys. Obviously, Nazardeen is newer to getting big fights in the main event. Roman, been around in the UFC a minute, had some fights with some big names now. Even though Nazardeen got, this is his second main event, I would argue that Roman is the one with more seasoning and more big light experience. I think that's very relevant. I think they're both well-rounded. Nazardeen, probably a more physically imposing guy. Roman, I think he's just a little more multifaceted in how he likes to incorporate his game. So it makes for a stylistically interesting fight. What about you?
Yeah, it is. I'm not like, you know, jumping over the moon here for this one with all the other stuff going on and, you know, still biting our fingernails, waiting for more big announcements to drop. But yes, it's a good matchup. These guys are going to come in and really, I think they're going to get after it. So it's going to be probably a pretty solid fight. Looking at it though, let's see. The Caucasian. What a nickname. Roman Dolidze. that's a bold move there.
I agree.
He must be from the Caucasus region of...
He's from Georgia, like Marab, right? Yeah, he's from
Georgia, yeah. But, yeah. You know, there's like a mountain... area, the Caucasus Mountains. Anyway, I kind of like him to win this. I think he's just going to be more aggressive and find success with his punches. Gosh, it's a tough one. Nasruddin. I mean, let's not count the man out, but I think I think they're going to come in and they're going to kind of go hard in the first round. And I think Roman's going to find some luck. Elbows, knees, something. And he's going to be able to, man, even saying it out loud, I'm like, are you sure? But I think he's going to be able to finish Imavov, not round one, round two. I say TKO, Dolidze.
I think speed. I think, volume and speed, I think, is going to be the key for Roman. Nasruddin's really good at a lot of stuff, like just big guy, executes the basics well, doesn't, kind of just, you kind of have to attack him with a lot. You know, if you're just fighting at a slow pace, he's really good at getting you there. Like I said, a physically big guy for the middleweight division.
Yeah.
But I think that Roman speed is probably going to be the thing that carries him past Nasruddin, and that I just think that's going to be what carries him through. I think that he just kind of, he was up against a really good vet in Vettori. I think that he's probably grown from that, and he's going to execute a lot better against Imavov, so we'll go from there.
Okay.
This is very much a month of middleweights since going back to last week. Next week, Joe Pyfer taking on Jack Hermanson. That's another one. That's
a banger, man. Yeah.
Be Joe Pyfer. I mean, forget Sean O'Malley, Jamal Hill, Dana White letting you know you could have a future in UFC if you just get after it. So, look, obviously huge moment for, I think he was the 2022 breakout star of contender. I think it's been a year that we've had Joe Pyfer.
Yeah.
So look, obviously huge fight, huge moment for him. Jack is a big veteran, so I'm looking forward to that one. And then, you know what, Natalie? I'm going to say it. I think sometime this week we're going to get that 300 main event.
I agree with you.
I think they took last week off. I think they're back in the office.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're going to get it too. All right. Yeah. Woo!
We're doing it. This time next week, UFC 300.
Okay.
We're calling it.
Nice.
Yeah. But guys, thank you so much for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week. Until then, have a good one.